Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, February 13th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt supervisor says Amazon distribution center looks like it's happening. Local weather alert, winter storm and sneaker wave risks this weekend. And Ray Hamill with the sports report. Stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
The permitting of an Amazon distribution center in McKinleyville has been confirmed by a Humboldt County supervisor, and it could mean more revenue for the county. Daniel Mintz reports.
A Humboldt County supervisor has said an Amazon distribution center in McKinleyville is in a permitting phase, and if it happens, it will bring much-needed sales tax revenue into the county's budget. The new development was discussed as the Board of Supervisors fielded a mid-year budget presentation at its February 10th meeting. Assistant County Administrative Officer Jessica Maciel said the budget adopted last July was based on the anticipation that spending will exceed income by about $20 million. But the delta between the two has narrowed, and the difference is now forecasted to be about $11 million. That means there's still a $9 million deficit, and while property tax revenue has risen, sales tax revenue has been declining and is now flat. Supervisor Steve Madrone said the county loses sales tax revenue when residents shop online instead of locally. He added that sales tax revenues from online shopping go to the communities where distribution centers are located. And he said the county's sales tax scenario could change as an Amazon distribution center is slated for McKinleyville.
If there's going to be this trend of shopping online, well, maybe we ought to have a distribution center so that we get more of our share out of that. In fact, there's one being proposed in McKinleyville at the Airport Business Park as we speak. And that's just come out recently with online chatter. There's applications at the building department for this. If the trend is going to continue to be shopping online, then hey, let's have a distribution center and get more of our sales tax. So that's a real thing. You know, people think they want to blame all the billionaires for all our problems on the planet, and yet we keep giving them all our money through shopping online. It's kind of, it's like, what is up with this, you know, if we really think it through. But that would actually, with that new distribution center, would actually probably increase our sales tax in the county because that's in the unincorporated area. And I'm assuming that that will lead to increased sales tax revenue in the coming years.
Asked to confirm if an Amazon distribution center would increase the county's sales tax revenue, Maciel said, quote, based on counties with distribution centers currently, I would say most likely yes. Madrone said, the distribution center, quote, looks like it's happening. Sales tax revenue funds Measure Z, the county's public safety services fund, which is expected to bring in as much as was forecasted for the current year, about $13 million. And there was discussion about reducing administration of Measure Z, as now the fund mostly continues paying for previously funded requests, and there's little room for new ones. Supervisor Natalie Arroyo said the community should be made aware of the minimal wiggle room.
If we're not envisioning much left for outside applicants, then I would want them to kind of have that message or set the amounts that they could apply for differently. And I know it's bucking the process a little bit to talk about it right now, but I've, you know, heard from some folks who, and you know, organizations that do amazing work all over our community are losing revenue right now from grant funding sources, and I think more of them than usual are looking to the Measure Z in with hopefulness around one-time funds to continue doing some like really meaningful work. So I would want to be able to convey that message that we expect that to be a much, much smaller pot.
The county's tight budget scenario includes leaving positions unfilled. During a public comment period, Drew Redden, the business agent for the county's employees union, said local government workers are dealing with increased workloads.
I can tell you right now that my members feel like they're being asked to do more with less. And I'm going to say it again later today. We need to do less with less if we're going to have less. And the expectations that exist for employees is too high for folks. They're burning out. They're going away. They can't be hired. And while we're talking about deallocating positions, just this past week, pursuant to AB 339, we just received notice from DHHS for outside contracting of our bargaining unit work to the tune of tens of millions of dollars just last week. So we're going to unfund and deallocate positions from workers here in the county that we can have services to the community from our public employees. And we're deallocating those and we're spending money because we can't hire enough people to do the work to begin with. And we're spending tens of millions in outside contracts.
Supervisors approved a series of modifications to the current fiscal year budget, including increasing the amount of general fund allocations to county departments by 5%. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Winter weather is making a comeback to Humboldt this weekend and into next week, bringing both mountain snow and dangerous conditions at the shoreline. According to the National Weather Service in Eureka, there are two different alerts for the next week. First, there is a moderate sneaker wave risk starting Thursday night through Saturday morning. Beachgoers are urged to avoid steep beaches or climbing up rock jetties and outcroppings. It is always wise to stay back from the surf and, most importantly, do not turn your back on the ocean. The second is a winter storm warning. Starting Monday and going into Thursday, the National Weather Service is tracking a cold system that could drop snow levels down to 2,000 feet, and storms are expected on the coast. KMUD talked with Zahaira Velez, a meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Eureka. She broke down the two separate weather alerts. Velez explained the reason for the sneaker wave risk this weekend.
Currently, we have a beach hazard statement out that remain effect till Saturday morning. We have a lone pier swell that is currently moving across the water. This is bringing moderate threat of a sneaker wave along the beaches.
And as the sneaker wave threat subsides, the focus shifts inland toward a cold incoming system. A winter storm watch is set to begin Monday and continue through Thursday. Velez notes that while the weekend starts with rain, a secondary, much colder system will follow quickly on its heels.
Right now, we are expecting two systems approaching the area. The first one will move through this weekend into early next week. That one will be generally bringing periods of rainfall. First, as some showers moving across the area on Saturday and becoming widespread by Sunday. So as I mentioned, periods of moderate rainfall will be with that system, and as well some breezy conditions as well from the south. Monday night, there is another colder and stronger system that will approach the area. And that system will bring snow levels dropping as low as 2,000 foot for Humboldt interior areas. So right now, we are expecting the main concern with that storm will be the snow impact for travels. Right now, we are forecasting between 6 to 18 inches of snow amount, total snow amounts from Monday night through Wednesday morning. Snow levels are expected as well. They have the potential for dropping as low as 1,500 feet with the heaviest precipitation, mainly for Monday night, Tuesday morning. So other concerns with this storm system will be accumulated small hail along the coastal areas of Humboldt, along the coast in Humboldt County. So that will bring dangerous conditions for driving and especially for motorcycles, And the conditions are expected gradually improve throughout the day on Wednesday. In addition, for this system, I forget to mention, it might bring the usual minor flooding for urban areas, those places that have a poor drainage as well.
The drop in temperature means significant accumulation of snow for mountain travelers, with Velez forecasting between 6 to 18 inches of snow through Wednesday morning. However, the impacts won't be limited to the mountains. Velez warns that coastal residents should prepare for messy conditions as well.
The main concerns with this secondary storm that will be colder, it will be small hail along the coastal area for lowest elevations, heavy mountain snow impacted travels for the early next week into mid next week, and periods of moderate to heavy rainfall as well, bringing the potential for minor flooding for urban areas and small streams.
Drivers are encouraged to use extreme caution, especially on interior passes and in areas with poor drainage. For the latest condition and real-time updates, you can always visit weather.gov/EKA/. And Ray Hamill with the sports report.
Get ready for one of the most exciting events of the year in local sports with the HDNL postseason Dick Nicolai Tournament Championship Games taking place at Lumberjack Arena on Friday night. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Nicolai Tournament Finals in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all of this week's high school basketball news, news of why it was a disappointing week for College of the Redwoods basketball, some college baseball and softball updates, and how the HDNL schools fared at last weekend's league wrestling championships. But first up, a huge crowd is expected at Lumberjack Arena on Friday night for the 2026 Dick Nicolai Tournament Championship Games. The girls' decider, which gets underway at 6 p.m, sees Arcata play Big Five rival Eureka. The two schools split their Big Five matchups this winter, with each winning on their home court. The Tigers edged the Loggers for this year's conference title. The Nicolai boys final will be played between a pair of conference champions and gets underway at 7:30. Big Five champs McKinleyville will face off against Little Four champs St. Bernard's. The Panthers have enjoyed plenty of recent success in the Nicolai tournament, having won the tournament twice in the last 3 years, including a victory over rival Arcata in last year's final. They will be playing for a fifth all-time Nicolai trophy. The Crusaders, meanwhile, have won the HDNL tournament just once, lifting the coveted trophy all the way back in 2002. They did reach the final 2 years ago, but lost to the Arcata Tigers. Both of this year's finalists won their semi-finals at College of the Redwoods on Tuesday night. St. Bernard's won a thriller, edging Del Norte 69-67 thanks to a buzzer beater by senior Tyler Heinrichs. The SB boys led by as many as 15 early in the game and by as many as 12 in the fourth quarter. But the Warriors would come storming back to make for an interesting finish, with junior Sawyer Fry getting a steal on a St. Bernard's inbound pass with 30 seconds remaining and then draining a game-tying three-pointer. But Heinrichs and the Crusaders had the final say to advance to Friday's championship game. In Tuesday's second semi-final, the McKinleyville boys comfortably took care of business against the Hoopa Warriors, winning 76-61. The Crusaders and Panthers have faced each other twice this year, with St. Bernard's winning on both occasions. St. Bernard's is 23-2 on the season, while McKinleyville is 18-8. The Dick Nicolai tournament got underway on Monday with four first-round games. In boys' action, Del Norte traveled to Arcata and won 72-68. The Warriors were the Big Five's third seed for the tournament. They had to win at Fortuna on the final night of the regular season last Friday, just to tie Eureka for third in the final conference standings. And then they had to travel to Eureka for a tournament play-in game on Saturday, which they won 70-59. In opening round action for the girls, Eureka defeated Del Norte 48-31, which was the Loggers' sixth straight win, while Ferndale defeated Hoopa 56-35. After the excitement of Friday night's tournament finals, most of the HDNL teams will turn their attention to the North Coast Section playoffs, which get underway early next week. The playoff brackets and seeds will be announced on Sunday. In local college basketball, meanwhile, it was a disappointing week for College of the Redwoods. Both CR teams played at Siskiyous on Saturday and split. The CR men won 82-67 to keep their conference championship hopes alive, but they followed that with a disappointing performance against Feather River at home on Wednesday night. The Corsairs were held scoreless for the opening 5 minutes of the game and fell 80-72 as the visitors remained unbeaten in the Golden Valley Conference conference and secured this year's title with the victory. The CR women lost at Siskiyou's 100-84 to fall out of a tie for the conference lead. They would bounce back to beat Feather River on Wednesday by a score of 57-52, but with Butte defeating Siskiyou's on the same night, the Roadrunners all but wrapped up the conference title. The CR women can clinch second in conference with a win over Lassen at home on Monday afternoon. The CR men will also play Lassen on Monday, with the women taking the court at 1 p.m. and the men's teams following at 3. Both Cal Poly Humboldt teams were also in action on Saturday at Stanislaus State. The Humboldt women made it 2 straight wins with a 72-61 victory, improving to 12-4 in conference and 14-8 overall, while the Humboldt men suffered a 3rd straight loss, falling 74-67 and dropping to 10-6 in conference and 12-10 overall. Both Humboldt teams will play at home this Saturday, hosting Cal State Dominguez Hills. Switching gears, the local college softball and baseball teams were also in action this week. The CR women went 3-3 on a road trip last weekend. They opened with back-to-back losses to Cabrillo by scores of 7-2 and 11-8 before sweeping a doubleheader against Porterville, winning 6-4 and 8-5. They closed out a busy few days with a doubleheader split against Coalinga, losing game 1 8-6 but bouncing back to take game 2 10-8 in 9 innings. Redwoods is now 5-6-1 on the season. The CR baseball team, meanwhile, hosted for the 2nd straight week, playing a 3-game series against unbeaten Ohlone and dropping all 3 games by scores of 19-8, 16-2, and 15-2. The unbeaten Renegades improved to 9-0, while CR dropped to 1-8. The Cal Poly Humboldt women, meanwhile, are in Hawaii this week. The Lumberjacks dropped a pair of 1-run softball games against Hawaii Hilo on Tuesday, falling 5-4 and 7-6 in 8 innings. With the 2 defeats, the Humboldt women dropped to 3-7 on the young season, with 4 of their 7 losses coming by the narrowest of margins. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, the HDNL Wrestling Championships were held at Lumberjack Arena on Saturday. The Del Norte boys enjoyed another dominating day on the mats, securing an 8 straight league title, while the Fortuna and Arcata girls were crowned co-champs. Fortuna placed first at Saturday's tournament, scoring 129 points, with Arcata just 7 points back. However, the Tigers enjoyed the better dual meet regular season, which includes points toward the overall league title, and both schools were crowned co-champs. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
In national news, Trump administration ending Minnesota ICE surge. Locals and Dems remain skeptical. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
White House Border Czar Tom Homan announced the end of Operation Metro Surge at a news conference in Minneapolis.
We've had great success with this operation, and we're leaving Minnesota safer. The surge is leaving Minnesota safer, Minneapolis safer, because of the cooperation we got with the counties and the state and local law enforcement responding to our needs. I'll say it again. It's less of a sanctuary state for criminals.
The Minnesota operation was the largest immigration enforcement action ever, resulting in more than 4,000 arrests, according to Homan. He rejected criticisms over ICE practices, saying there have been no arrests in churches, hospitals, or elementary schools. Homan had announced last week that 700 federal officials would leave Minnesota immediately, leaving 2,000. He says the drawdown now will continue next week, and he will stay to oversee it. He also says quick response forces, or QRFs, will also stay for now.
But there will be some security teams staying here, the QRFs, until we're assured that those agitators incidents either stay low or further decline. I'm not going to remove everybody out of the safety order of officers, but like I said, and Operation Metro Surge is ending. And in the next week, we're going to deploy the officers here on detail back to the home stations or other areas of the country are needed.
Homan frames the end of the operation as a success made possible by cooperation from local officials. But those local officials tell a more complicated story. At a congressional hearing on ICE Thursday, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison told senators there has been no cooperation on the killings of Pretty and Good.
this situation when we were told you can't have access to the evidence, to the crime scene. That was highly unusual and surprising to us. And so we're hoping that we can gain cooperation, perhaps in the Preddy matter. But we've been advised that the good matter is the feds are not investigating it, and we still haven't received any access to the evidence that is involved in that case. So it's an unusual, strange situation, but we're with good faith, hoping that things will change.
Later, a reporter asked Ellison whether he trusts the feds to follow through on the drawdown.
I guess we're in I certainly hope so, right? I mean, Operation Metro Search has really hurt Minnesota. And so I'm very hopeful that it's true, but I'm going to have to see what people on the ground are telling me before I would accept that it's in fact the case.
Back in Minnesota, Governor Tim Walz shared mixed feelings about Homan's announcement. He spoke at a news conference in St. Paul.
We are cautiously optimistic, as we've said, and that this surge of untrained, aggressive federal agents are going to leave Minnesota. And I guess they'll go wherever they're going to go. But the fact of the matter is, they left us with deep damage, generational trauma. They left us with economic ruin in some cases. They left us with many unanswered questions.
The end of the Minnesota surge comes as lawmakers debate funding for the Department of Homeland Security, with Democrats holding out for reforms to ICE practices. Democratic senators are also expressing skepticism over the end of the Minnesota surge. Senator Richard Blumenthal is a Democrat from Connecticut.
The reduction in the numbers of agents in Minneapolis, the so-called elimination of the surge, in no way changes the tactics which the American people are demanding be reformed. The violence and brutality, including killing people, has to be totally stopped. And the American people are demanding fundamental and far-reaching reforms that we are insisting be a condition of funding for DHS.
Top House Democrats sounded a similar message at an informal hearing on ICE and accountability. Democrat Catherine Clark of Massachusetts is the House Minority Whip.
Kristi Noem needs to go. Stephen Miller needs to go. Federal agents need to get back to their core mission and abide by the same rules, the same laws, the same Constitution as any other law enforcement officer. And this needs to happen today. No more delays, no more CRs, no more state-sanctioned terror.
As for Minnesota, Governor Walz says the state is focusing on recovery. State Attorney General Ellison says he's never been more proud to be a Minnesotan.
I'm so proud of the people who helped their neighbors, who stood up for their First Amendment rights, some of which was criticized in here. I hope it's over. And now it's the time to heal and put things back together again. And I have every confidence that we will do that.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Brian Bull reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The 15th annual Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirit Powwow is happening this Valentine's Day. Buffalo's Fire reports that organizers hope that the event goes fine, with participants and volunteers feeling safe and supported as the rawhide drum ushers in the grand entry. Sapot Flores is a co-chair for the Bates Powwow. She says this year, the presence of immigration and customs enforcement is creating concerns.
We are developing very specific ICE protocols internally. We hear these forms of propaganda where Two-Spirit people are quote-unquote terrorists. All of these different attacks on our community. But it's still going to happen because it is a tantamount important event that people need.
Another co-chair, Kat Warren, says the Trump administration has made things challenging for Two-Spirits and the Native LGBTQ plus community. The president has rolled out executive orders that bans gender-affirming care for youth and defines gender as only male or female, determined at conception.
You know, a lot of our folks are very concerned about the folks that are going to attend this panel, because we do bring in a lot of folks, and we want to make sure everyone is taken care of and able to experience the medicine of the powwow. We see the struggles and we see the ongoing pressure of this administration, and we are trying our best to be above it.
Bates is regarded as the largest two-spirit powwow in North America, with non-gender contest dancing and flags representing Native LGBTQ+ and two-spirit people. States and tribes would have less power to protect waterways under the Clean Water Act when reviewing energy and infrastructure projects. As Danielle Kading reports, the Environmental Protection Agency would limit their authority under a new rule.
EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin said the changes would protect water quality while ending, quote, weaponization of the law that has delayed or blocked projects. States and authorized tribes can review the effects of dams, bridges, and pipelines on wetlands and waterways under the Clean Water Act. The proposal would narrow water quality impacts they could consider. Nancy Stoner is an attorney with the Environmental Law and Policy Center. She says the rule would also remove a process that allows tribes to weigh in on federally regulated projects, even if they haven't adopted their own programs to set water quality standards.
So it puts a huge hurdle in front of tribes that they have to actually adopt a whole water quality standards program in order to look at a federally permitted activity and what are the impacts on the waters, on the tribal waters.
About 15% of federally recognized tribes have received approval from the EPA to adopt their own programs for water quality standards. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
I don't know where she is.
You don't know? I won't tell.
And this weekend sees the return of the AMC series Dark Winds. The award-winning detective series takes place in 1970s Navajo country. Zahn McLarnon plays Tribal Police Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn, who finds himself stalked by a mysterious woman who carves a path of destruction across the reservation. Franca Patenta plays Irena Fagan. She and McLarnon discuss their dynamic upon their first physical meeting in the season.
He was vulnerable with no clothes on, half naked, but also vulnerable in his life and what he's going through psychologically and emotionally, with possibly losing his wife and searching for what the Diné people call hojo, you know, the balance and stability in his life. And he's in search of that very much when he meets Irene for the first time.
I'm not connected to the earth anymore. So she's very impressed and very enamored with what she's seeing, and she just wants to devour that.
Dark Winds premieres Sunday night on AMC. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
The 30th Annual Alaska Native Art Auction, celebrating Indigenous artists and voices, takes place Saturday, March 21st. Corporate sponsorship opportunities are available. Information at kmba.org.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael McCaskill. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Ray Hamill, Christopher Martinez, and Brian Bull. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org. And now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.